And just go ahead. I think levels are good. Everyone give me one last check. Yeah, down. Yeah, he's number three.
Sweet.
Oh, because we were messing with the gain in the beginning. Yeah. Yeah. Figure out. It's like, this one is so much quieter.
Had the mic backwards. It got spun around.
Okay, perfect.
How's that? Is that better?
Tiny bit more, if you can.
Down?
Yeah.
Up.
Oh, up.
Yeah,
up. How about perfect, that? Perfect. Good, good, good.
Check, okay. Check.
Check.
Okay, we're rolling in. We are live. Welcome okay. back, everybody.
Welcome to Under the Influence.
Hey, hey.
With the Georges. Today, we have a very special guest. Not just because I'm working with him on new music, but... Because you are a dude that lit a dude. I don't know why that. But
I'm a dude.
You're a dude. You're a guy that lives your passion.
Because he's younger than you, and you.
He
you,
is.
You were searching for a word that
I
wasn't
know.
The right one.
Ugh, I feel like everyone's younger than me nowadays. Anyways, but Jay Crocker, producer and artist. I feel like you handle your career in a very just a different, a smart, a way where you're planning ahead for the future and developing a brand for yourself mm-hmm. and then other people as well. So I thought you'd be a perfect person to have on.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
What a nice introduction.
Well,
yeah.
You're going to have to actually tell people more detail.
Yeah,
but no, that's all they get.
Yeah. And then today's subject, if you will, loose theme, we're talking about opportunity. And what first question is, what is opportunity
yeah,
to you?
It,
let's
from,
define it.
Like being the antagonist, what is opportunity? What do you think is an opportunity?
I think the only reason that's a tough question is because opportunity is everywhere.
There
like
we go.
What ooh. We were just talking about. I mean, mm-hmm.
if I had a horn, I'd be dropping it. Yeah.
Oh man, that leads me to a story. My dad and I were at the ASAP Ferg.
Yeah. Your dad's man. In the house. Shout out
he's
to
in
Tim.
The house.
Tim
ooh,
Crocker.
Boom, boom, boom. The DJ hit that.
Pew, 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 pew.
This is a total tangent. The DJ hit that probably like 300 times
oh,
in the
my
set.
God.
And it was ever since then, every time I play it, he just, what the hell are you
doing? Just wants
am
to
I allowed
out.
To swear on this?
You can do
oh,
whatever
yeah,
you
yeah.
want. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, tight. Anyway, opportunity. Yeah, it's everywhere. Just like we were talking about, you know, Gary Vee. Everybody watches Gary Vee and they see, oh, he's going to go buy some baseball cards. That's mm-hmm. opportunity. Now everybody yeah. does that. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I guess it's hard to define opportunity for me because it's yeah. like, it's obviously a very cliche thing. It's like, there's opportunity everywhere. Just like mm-hmm. there's inspiration everywhere.
Right.
But it's really true. Like you look everywhere around you and you can find something to do. And that's why it's like, I have a very get off your ass mentality.
Love it.
You know, and for myself, for everybody around us, it's like, you better be on your hustle or get the hell out of this,
yeah.
this circle, you know? So it's like, I think opportunity for me comes from the people I surround myself in or my group, you know, because
yeah.
like, it's tough because I don't really have friends, you know, I either have like family or business partners, really.
Yeah.
What, you know, I don't really have this friend group where we just hang out, you know? Like every time.
Plus, you're working a lot,
yeah,
right?
Well,
right?
yeah. I mean, all the time. It's yeah. the music industry. It never stops.
Let me ask you, how old are you?
24.
Which doesn't matter at all. But that's one of the things I think is most impressive yeah. about you so far is even when you're scheduling stuff, you're very active and thoughtful about it. When you're running behind, you're actively engaged. It's like, I think that just from afar, the professionalism that you bring at 24,
you
have a distinct advantage over most 24-year-olds.
That means a lot.
Especially
yeah.
with the kind of stereotypes that millennials have of not hard workers, not professional. And especially in the music industry, we see that shit all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Where people don't show up, they're not prepared, they don't know like, what time to even yeah. be there.
It's hard to categorize myself as a millennial because I don't like going out. if I'm doing any kind of activity, it's probably watching a movie at home with my family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sober. What else? I drink coffee like all the time. I'm on time like majority of the time,
yeah.
except when the GPS brings it to the other side
well,
of the
but
island.
You texted at the time
yeah,
you're
well,
supposed
no,
to be
I'm,
here.
I'm
like
we're
that.
On an
yeah.
island. Like you get
yeah.
one shot to get it right. Otherwise, like if you miss it going the wrong direction,
oh,
you're,
yeah, yeah.
I went
you
to
40th go to
on the other side. It was, yeah,
oh,
it was wild.
Nice.
But no, anyway, it was, you know, it's hard to categorize myself as like a millennial because like all the things that I'm supposed to do, I don't do. I don't go to bars. I don't,
yeah.
you know, I'm not on Tinder. I don't know, you know, there's many things and I'm like, man, this is just not me. So I'm an old soul, I guess.
I love it. Told. Well, give the people some backstory. So how
sure.
did you, when did you decide to become like a full-time producer? How did you kind of decide that was your path? And, yeah, go from there.
Well, when did I decide music was a full path? I think it was once I realized that I couldn't play baseball forever, which is, you know, it was like huge love of my life. But I
hit, how old were you when you found that out?
I hit sophomore year and I tossed my shoulder out and I was like, man.
See, I hit sophomore year and dudes could throw a curve.
Right.
Like I had an illustrious baseball career until I was like, I thought that was going to hit me in the face and it was a strike and I'm done.
Yeah.
Then no, I went to track.
Exactly. Everybody has that one point where they're like, oh man, I can't do this forever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I had this, you know, I mean, I was thinking about going to college and playing baseball and doing that whole route. And I was like, you know what? This isn't going to be forever. I love the game of baseball. I want to be involved with it, help kids, help the youth and stuff like that. But for me, it's like, my biggest passion, sorry, drink a bubbly before this. My biggest passion, you know, outside of
not sponsored,
not sponsored, no, outside of baseball and everything was being creative and making music. And I grew up in a really artistic household. My mom's an artist. My dad's just like a music guy. Mm-hmm. And so it was always a really artistic, free flowing kind of household of like, if you love it, just do it.
Yeah.
You know, don't talk about doing it, just do it. So I think that point where I was like, hey, I'm doing this, but I'm also like playing baseball. And then I was like, well, I'm going to put this baseball thing aside. Let me just see what this has to offer. And people ask me, it's like, when did it change from being a hobby to being like a professional thing? It's kind of tough because it kind of just happened.
Yeah.
It didn't really, it wasn't like, oh, I was just making music for fun. And then I started making it like a professional thing. It
who opened up the door for you first though? Like who showed
what was
you,
where's your first opportunity? Yeah.
No, that's a great question. I love the story because I always tell it and it's a cool thing because I teach like seventh and eighth graders and I teach high schoolers music production.
Yeah.
So there's always a cool story of like, this is how you get yourself into it. But so I the beginning days of social media, I started messaging all the people that I listened to. So I was a big like hip hop head in like Seattle, local Seattle hip hop, loved it. So I just messaged like everyone I could that I listened to, not really trying to get anything from it more than just like introducing myself. I was a big fan of like, I just need to let these people know who my name is. Like my name isn't even a thing yet. I'm not even good at all, but I just need to let them know who I am, let them know I'm here and give me a few years cause I'm going to play ball, you know? And, so I just started messaging people, all the people I listened to and like two people got back to me. And one of them was Ryan Lewis, which is funny because this was like before they popped off at all. I was just messaging saying like, hey, I love what you do. Keep doing it. You're inspiring us younger kids and stuff. And then another, artist that I was listening to at the time, his name was Raz Simone. He opened, the first door for me and was like, hey, so you like made beats? And I was like, this is a good lesson for anybody listening to it. Just even if you don't, just say you do.
Yeah.
Because I was figured out later. Yeah. Totally.
Dad's nodding hard over there. Yep.
Too many situations where I ran into that where it was like, yep, I do. You know, like, do you sing? Yep, I do. You know, and just figuring that out as it goes. So I was like, hey, so you make beats and stuff? I was like, yeah, of course. He's like, can I hear some? And I was like, yeah, here you go. And he actually liked them. So I was like, oh, cool. To make a really long story short, I started, basically producing and co-producing like all of his music through my like high school, like kind of mid through high school. And then after I graduated and stuff. So starting at the age of like 16, I was in, oh, the baby's awake.
Oh, snap. Oh, the first interruption of course. Our,
I wonder. If I was wondering. I was like hearing it. I was like, of course he's going to pop off when we have our guest.
I don't know if it was the dog. Let me know when I'm good.
We're good.
Cool.
Okay, so you reach out to Raz. He gets back to you.
He gets back to me. I start going to the studio with him and kind of learning that whole process, which my whole career, it's kind of funny because every situation I've just been thrown into and I figure it out, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was like, hey, you're in the studio. Like, figure it out. This is how, you know, I need stems. And I'm like, what are stems?
Yeah. Exactly. You
know? So just figuring it out as I go. So I was like 16 at the time, 15, 16 when I like.
What's the scene like in the studio at 16 with those guys?
I was just a chubby little white kid that knew how to make beats. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to build you guys, you know, like coming in with like this thought of, I need to somehow make this stuff better, you know, like that was my mentality,
fingerprint on it.
Yeah. And it still is my mentality. It's like, I could be in the room with the greatest artist of all time, but I'm going to do my best to somehow make it better or elevate it in a way. Right.
Yeah.
So it was still the same mentality, but it was just me not knowing how the hell to do that. Whereas now I'm like, oh, I have a really good idea of how to do that for whoever I'm working with. I was like, okay, I'm going to figure this out. You know, like, this is what I think would be a good melody, you know? Yeah. And it's like, is that a good melody? No. Okay, cool. You know, and just kind of like learning as I go. And honestly, I got to pay homage to, Elliot Idy. He was the engineer at Undercast. This was the studio that we went to back when I was younger, out in like Shoreline. He would just grill me. It would. Yeah. I'd be like, "Here's the stems." He's like, "Why do you have five kicks layered on top of each other?" I'm like, "It's more powerful." He's like, "No, it's not." So I just learned all the like the technical side of production from, you know, those nights, because we would work like 2 a.m. to like 6 a.m. sessions, mm-hmm. and outside, like leave school, like go home and do my homework, and then like go to the studio at 2 a.m.
Parents were cool with that?
I mean, he knew I wasn't gonna get in trouble because, you know, My dad's like, oh, geez. So he talked to everybody and he's like, don't fuck around. Yeah. Like, you
know? Yeah. Rattle some cages for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was like, you know, everybody knew what it was, and it was, you know, business is business. Mm-hmm. So we were going there to get work done. And, you know, that translated into when I first started going to college, which I decided to go kind of a different route than everybody. And you know, I had good enough grades to go wherever, but I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go to community college and learn how to make music, you know. So I did the music program at Shoreline, nice. Which highly recommend to anybody. Awesome program. So I did that, but we were still doing the studio stuff like every night. So mm-hmm. it'd be like 2 a.m., 6 a.m., then I got class at 8 a.m.
Dang.
I'm like, you know, so I started sleeping in my car in like the Shoreline parking lot. I put like this little mattress in my car. But you know, the opportunity. That's the, you know, I wasn't gonna miss an opportunity. You know, even to my own detriment, I'm not going to, you know, not going to get sleep, but I'm going to get every opportunity I can, except the sleep opportunity. But yeah, so I started producing basically all of his music, or at least co-producing it, you know, and then that kind of turned into a point where I was just touching everything that we did, and super grateful for those times, because it was, I just learned so much.
Yeah.
So like so much experience.
Did that come to an end, or are you still actively involved?
Not as much with his music anymore. I met so many people through that though.
I
so
imagine,
the hip hop door opened, but I was making a ton of stuff before that wasn't in the hip hop vein. So I started producing for like Romeo Francois, Sam Lachow, who mm-hmm. I'm doing his album right now. We're finishing that up. And then, I mean, so many people.
He played at Summer Jam at one of our first like non-dates that we had.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. So we, like, just a quick interjection of the backstory.
Did he play there?
He was. Raz was there with him. And so
when was it?
So this would have been about 4 years ago. And Rich Penton and Scott, the Sky Movement guys, had gotten a hold of the Summer Jam at the amphitheater. And I had previously heavily invested in one of the dope music festivals. We brought Chris Brown, Schoolboy Q, and Tyga, Corrupt, like whole crew.
Out of like Tacoma Dome?
Yes. Yeah, and it was Rich's first big, and I love Rich. He'll close his eyes and swing as hard as he can. And if he misses, he misses. And so he had this project, and we were bringing Wiz was the main draw, and he switched it up because Chris Brown was on tour but not coming to Seattle, so he could do a jump over and just come in and do a quick night and then get back on tour. So he gave a discount, which was still, it blew the budget out of the water.
I'm sure.
And that's where one of my attorneys and myself, we got involved. This is the medical days. I was talking with your dad about this beforehand. Yeah. There was a lot more money floating around in those days. And so we jumped in and we helped fund the project, and it was a disaster, but not throwing shade on anyone. Yeah, it was way bigger of a project than anyone anticipated.
I remember that happening, and kind of like, I've always had like a pretty good business mind on my, you know, on my shoulders. I'm like, oh man, like, that's a pretty stacked bill, you know,
Big time, and like
having the,
we had Devin the Dude, it just went on and on.
Yeah. And I mean, festivals to start off, and like my manager books festivals all over the world, and like big stuff. And it's like,
remember the venue takes the money first.
Yeah.
Every time it all goes in escrow, and Tacoma Dome got paid first. Yeah. And a lot of people, myself included, were on the wrong side of that. And it was really just a learning curve. But because of that, Rich, kind of broke onto the scene and got a hold of Summer Jam at White River.
Nice.
And he was able to put Clem and everybody on a little bit. And Sam played that year as well. And that was, I remember that around all those guys a lot. And I've actually not, like, I think Susan probably told you that, like, I've spoke to Raz like through social media as well. Mm-hmm. But my connection there a little bit is really through King Lee's.
Oh, Lazy.
Yeah.
My guy.
Yeah. So he used to come around. I had originally opened up a studio in Maple Valley.
Okay.
And
what was that called?
Secret Studio, because it was connected to a big grow and we had our commercial kitchen there.
Gotcha.
And so it was a 5-acre property with a 5 or 6,000 square foot warehouse with what was originally my house also built into it. Then we had a pool house and a 3 or 4,000 square foot barn, and then a separate house that, so we had a whole crew. And so when I first got started, it was all centered around cannabis. And then we had all the square footage. And of course the music thing for me, I'd always looked at it. We say it in the intro of this show. It's like, if I'm not going to play for the Sonics, I'd like to buy the Sonics, or I'd like to own a team and find a way to contribute. So the studio was a project where I just kind of lucked out and had a couple of, actually Austin Jenks came around and he did like a Issaquah festival. And I sat down with him and I had had this weird experience with Zach Brown. Zach Brown doesn't smoke. Zach Brown Band.
Yeah.
I just outed a story that I've already told on the podcast that I said.
Oh, I've heard it. That was important.
So the short version of this is, I went to a Zach Brown show. It was terrible. I told him about it. I reached out through their fan club and said, this was garbage. I was broke. I came home from Florida. I sold a dresser in the morning and I went to your show and it was junk. Like he was sick and they should have canceled. And so they said, come back next year and we'll put it on for you. So the next year I said, I'm coming back. So we did a meet and greet. I ended up spending a few hours with Zach on the tour bus and may or may not have had my brother bring product over from Seattle and send them home on a private jet.
Yeah.
And so a lot of product. Anyway, that story was kind of known in the community. Like, we didn't tell everybody, but my friend who had Austin at a barbecue said, hey, tell him about that, because he loves Zach Brown. They're kind of cut in the same cloth.
Yeah.
And so I told the story and he said, hey, and Zach Brown was giving me a hard time for using, I was using some bougie software. And he was like, if you're not using Pro Tools, like, you just got to get out of here with that. So I was telling that part of the story and Austin said, listen, if you'll build the studio, I'll help you put it together.
Nice.
And took me to a Guitar Center where he knew somebody who used their employee discount.
Yeah.
And so we built the first studio really, really crude. In that one of the warehouses, I just had a bunch of square footage. So we built that. And then when he was leaving for Nashville, he put me onto Alan Stone.
Oh, nice.
And so that's where I met Alan originally. And then of course was just getting product to Alan and his manager. I'm not even going to go there at all, but I got sucked into funding, not sucked into, I had an opportunity to fund that kid on the wall back there in that painting. His name is Jinx. We did I love Jinx. He's still a very good friend of mine to this day. We put up some money to do a project for him. And it was kind of like right when the Lumineers first record came out and Bear Creek put that out, we had some connections with them and Jinx wanted to do something a little different. And I funded a song that I didn't love. And I ended up like with a bunch of money in and no real way of getting paid back, and Nabisco and ESPN. And we started getting a bunch of sync deals. Mm-hmm. And the sync money was coming in. We did a song for Nabisco for Oreo and he got like $5,000. I thought, well, my contract doesn't get me any of that.
Yeah.
So we kind of did a 360 deal because I was like at my wit's end that I didn't think I could put any more money in and ever see it back. And then Cricket Wireless picked up that song. Huh. So we had John, who did Ryan and Macklemore's Same Love video.
Yeah.
He did a video for us and I paid like $22,000, which I'm sure I got fleeced by six people in between getting the project done and where it started.
Damn.
But then I paid to mix and master it. And we threw a fair amount of money at it. And just by the grace of God, Cricket picked it up and they paid like, we thought we were getting like $50,000 and everyone was really happy. I was getting just a little slice of that. And then we didn't know a whole lot about SAG residuals and BMI. Mm-hmm. And they spent about $250 million on that commercial. So when you saw that little furry ball dancing around on a Cricket commercial, in the background was our track Alive. And they dropped the vocals and did a number of things with it. But we got a few pennies every time they ran it.
Yeah.
And man, they ran the hell out of that ad. So I actually ended up doing quite well in that. And I just reinvested all that in the studio.
Nice.
When my dispensary in Seattle, when it was time to close because it wasn't going to be an option to use that building, I converted it to a studio, and that's part of the reason I know Susan. But Leezy used to come down and work with one of the engineers there a lot and did a lot of projects with K-Fi. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he's one of my favorite DJs in the world.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, Leezy. Yeah, man. All those dudes, like, those are the dudes I grew up with in the industry. Like, Man, yeah, that whole crew, like, they're all good people.
Yeah, the whole Black Umbrella thing got me because I like the videography side of things. So Raz's videos early on, I was like, whatever the, I don't even know what the Black Umbrella, like, imprint stood for, whether it was the music or the video or everybody involved. I just thought that video was amazing.
I mean, I'm not involved anymore, but it's what it taught me as a whole is, like, you know, you put in work and you get something from it, basically, you know? So it's like, what I learned, I'm very grateful for sure.
So that's, then what, at that age, that's awesome.
What are you looking towards now? So you're moving more to pop.
Things are a lot different. So what it's like, I
hard shift, downshift to the pop scene.
Yeah, a lot of it was,
take it back to me, Susan says.
So it's like, I started in the hip hop thing, which I love dearly, grew up on the music. And then I was just, I felt like backed into a corner, not in like a bad way, but I was like, man, I don't want to just be the dude that just makes hip hop beats. Like,
it's a crowded lane.
Yeah. Well, not to mention, like, I was continually making things that didn't fit any of the artists that I was working with. And I was like, what am I going to do with all this stuff? Like, you know, nobody's going to rap over this or whatever. Yeah. So I started saying, like, you know what? I need to explore, like, some of my other options and the different people, because I have a knack for building artists and helping them develop their sound. It's like, why just do that in the hip hop side? Like, let me branch out. So I started producing for a few different pop artists from, like, here in LA, and just kind of getting my feet wet in and, like, okay, how is this? And I was like, oh, damn, like, I can do this. Like, I think melody first is, like, is what I've always, and I initially think about it. I'm like, melody, melody, melody. And that's, like, the most important thing in pop music. So I started transitioning to that and producing for a bunch of different pop artists, which ended up being, like, a ton of fun. It was like a breath of fresh air for me.
Do you feel like they have a little more money for their projects?
100%. Me
too.
Every rapper that
hits. Me too.
He comes in.
No, I mean,
100%.
Not to throw shade on, like, anybody who's working.
I didn't say a name earlier that I didn't put money in as opposed to getting it back out. Yeah,
and it's like, money's a weird thing in this industry because it's like, it's a necessary evil because it's like, you got to eat, but everybody's working on, like, the tightest budget in the world. So it's, you know, there's a lot of leniency with it all. But, like, man, these kids out here, they got to know, like, what to put their money towards. It's like a huge piece of advice and opportunity. It's like, I get hit up by kids all the time that are like, yo, I love your production. Can I buy a beat? I'm like, number one, no, I don't just sell beats because I produce people. I don't just dish off my work and hope that it's good after, you know.
You're not going, like, to mix it. You're not going to master it.
Like my hands are going to be on it that entire process, you know. And then two, like, you're not going to be able to afford it, you know, not to sound cocky, but, like, spend that money on bringing it to a studio to actually, like, record it professionally. Like, book some hours with me. Don't buy a beat from me just yet. Like, it's important to think about those things. And I know a lot of, you know, people out there selling beats and stuff as beat makers. It's fine. It's a totally different art than what I'm into. But it's one of those things that these young kids up and coming need to understand. Like, they need to put in time to learn their voice in front of a microphone, not a USB microphone that's, you know, getting their voice to sound like it's coming out of a tin can, and just all these things. So I'm super harsh with my feedback to people, but
I've really only need, though.
Well, yeah, I've really only gotten, like, one bad response. They're like, man, like, how, what do you mean you don't like it? And I'm like, dude, you know, but most people are like, you know what, man, thank you. I needed that. Everybody else just gives me some bullshit. Like, hey, keep doing you, you know?
Right,
so,
right.
To me, it's like,
giving them actual feedback. Seems like
pop would be the same way, though, too. When you're trying to mold an artist you've got a vision. I don't think people listening or even people involved in even people that are in the industry still don't fully realize, like, how much the production side, like, production carries it. Weight.
Well, especially in today's industry. Yes. It's like, you got to realize, like, you can't just really sell an acapella in today's world. But, like, a lot of kids, like, it's a tough pill to swallow, but a lot of kids just don't listen to lyrics, you know? It sucks because it's like, I'm a lyric guy too. I love good quality lyrics, but, like,
Susan overpronouncing lyrics. I've been saying it for years.
That's,
like,
true. The first time in the studio, he's like, you don't need to pronounce it so much. I was like, I know, I do that. And Jake, it's on me too. It's
true,
though.
Crazy.
But, and then we always, like, listen to music and we're like, oh, I love this song. And then I look at him like, can you imagine if I came to you and said, here's my, you know, here's my number, call me maybe. And that was, like, the song I wrote that day. Like,
But
what
it's,
we the feedback has been when it
you
works.
Know someone, when you know the artist, like it's different. You critique the song totally different.
You know
it's hard to pull
you know
away
I've been
from.
Practicing recently is I listen to new music every single day. But what I've been doing is I've been putting my headphones on and I just hit shuffle on like New Music Friday, like on Spotify and stuff. And I don't look at who the artist is, and I try and get through the song until I get to a point where I'm like, this is garbage or this is awesome, right? And then I look and I'm like, oh, it's an artist I know and it's garbage, or oh, it's somebody I don't know and this is great, just because there's so much of that. Like, ooh, I mean, I'll tactic. Sit there and I'll just look and I'll be like, not someone I know, yep. not someone I know. And then I think about it, I'm like, wait, I'm that person that nobody knows on the other end. Yeah. So they, you know, I gotta give these guys an opportunity. So I think, I mean, I'm a big believer in karma. So if I'm gonna listen to somebody else's 30 seconds, like hopefully they'll listen to mine, right?
Yeah.
So you know, it's I don't even know where we came from. Oh, like what? Pop artists versus like hip hop artists. I think anybody who's willing to invest in their career is worth talking to, and that doesn't mean monetarily. That like see, just monetary. That means time wise. That means everything. Because like I was once the kid. My bad. I was once the kid who like. Didn't have all the talent in the world, but I had more drive than anybody on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, I was not sleeping if I didn't.
Yeah,
if
you
I
got
a
call,
but that's
I was
why
in.
At 24, you're on a podcast talking about opportunity and building businesses
100%.
In an industry that 24-year-old musicians are typically. Most of them don't have bank accounts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like just, and never mind like understanding how to run a schedule and be diligent. So that's, I mean, to your credit, that's the whole reason this makes sense for us. So you're doing a lot of things right. But on the pop scene, one of the things that I think is interesting is one, I think it's more female driven, at least in this market.
See, that's tough because it's like, I'm a proponent of just talent. As a whole, it's like, I don't care who you are, male, female, whatever in between. Like, I don't care. As long as you love what you do and you're passionate about it, it's like, come to me, let's work. Right. So it's like, it's tough because it's a very female vocal driven industry, but there's far less like female empowerment in the industry, which is so weird. It's like,
but that's back to the, how much does the producer's role play on a hit song?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, I'm a big proponent of, if you're coming to the studio with me, like I want you to feel one, comfortable 100%, and two, like you're being taken care of, and three, like your ideas are being heard. Like I know too many producers or people just sit in, they're just like, I'm just gonna do everything and it'll be good at the end, or like I'm not gonna do jack shit, you take over, figure it out, and then I'll clean it up after. It's like, if I'm working with somebody, I want it to be like a group project. And that's why whenever I'm working with somebody, they're sitting right next to me. And even if they're not sitting there choosing the sounds, choosing the melody, at least like I was talking to one of my artists the other day, and she was just like, I feel like you do everything. And then I just sit there and like, I'm not aiding as much as I feel like I should. And I'm like, no, you just being here aids enough, because like your presence allows me to like look over at you and like feel your emotion. Like, is this good? Is this bad? And it's just, that's just part of the talent of being a producer versus like a beat maker. Like a beat maker is going to sit in their basement and just make beats all day, and they could be bangers, whatever. But like a producer has to have the knowledge of like reading body language and, you know, being a therapist sometimes and being able to bring out like, why are you so upset today? Like, let's talk about that for a second, because that conversation is going to influence the lyrics of the song or the melody of the direction we're going in today. It's like, it's kind of that's why it's so much fun, because it changes every day.
Yeah.
Every day, you know.
Because the stuff that's, what's the quote where the thing that you're afraid to say, right? That.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if you are in those times where someone's, you know, going through something, to put it into the music, that's what's going to be impactful. And that's what people are going to connect to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that takes a very special skill to be able to pull that out of somebody.
Absolutely.
And make them comfortable to like, record it.
Yeah. And obviously it doesn't work 100% of the time.
Right.
It's like, you're gonna say, I've gotten pretty good at it now. If I sit across from somebody, I'm like, we don't vibe.
Yeah,
you know, like it's just how it goes, and that's okay. That's not a bad thing. It's just like our mojos don't link up together.
Yeah,
you know, and that happens. But more often than not, I'll sit down with somebody, and as long as their intentions are match mine, you know, like we're good to go. You know, and I just want to work with hungry people who
so
I feel
I
like
I want to ask
someone.
who the most difficult person is, but I'll ask, what's a project
it's
you've
me.
Worked on?
It's me.
I live with you, so I'm just kidding. we were doing the spin the wheel thing, and one of the
you
questions
you can ask who's the most difficult person to work with.
I'm okay.
My damn self. Honestly.
You bastard.
No. 100%.
You cheap shotted me there. Set me up.
It really is. And we could transition this, because like I'm a solo artist as well, and I release stuff that's kind of more like electronic pop. And I decided to do a solo career after just years of being kind of the behind the scenes producer. And I was like, you know what? I need to be able to build a brand around this if I'm going to sustain this, because I see too many producers who are producing for large artists and end up, you know, getting dropped or left to the wayside once the artist gets signed and they don't want to bring their producer with them. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this for myself. One, because I feel like it's necessary. And two, because my peers that I really respect around me are like, yo, you need to start releasing your own stuff because it's really good. Mm-hmm. You know? And then I started doing that and building that. But I'm definitely the hardest person to work with for myself, because for some reason, it's just so easy for me to I'll sit down in 2 hours and make an entire song with some artist, and then I'll sit there just by myself. Maybe it's just because I'm so critical of my own stuff, and like having somebody there with me gives me like the false confidence of like, oh, like somebody else they likes this already.
It's good. Yeah. 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 So what do you think for yourself, going back to opportunity? Do you think, if you could pick your opportunity, would you rather have your path laid out for you as an artist or as a producer?
Ooh. See, I, this is such a hard question, because people, I mean, I've sat in like meetings before, they're like, well, you need to choose one or the other.
Which is fuck bullshit, you. Right?
Yeah. I think it's, in today's world, it's, they kind of go hand in hand.
But this is meant to be a hard question. Sure, for you. Sure.
I'm going to lay it out. I'm not going to give you the easy way out. But what I can compare it to is, I see a lot of producers nowadays that are building themselves as almost artist first, producer second, but they're still primarily a producer. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, like a Diplo, right? Diplo is an amazing producer. You know, whether you like him or not, who fucking cares, you know, but he's the plaques are on the wall, whatever. So, you know, amazing producer, you know, but he's not necessarily sitting there putting his voice on a track and writing the entire thing. He's producing for all these different artists. But he's still showing up on their Spotify profiles. He's still showing up on, you know, on their Instagram pictures as this artist, and he's been able to build this brand around his name, while still just being this producer that, if was behind the scenes, maybe could have made it, like, you know, a Max Martin or any of these.
But it's large the difference producers. Between like saying featuring Diplo. Yeah. Like that's the thing that kind of gets the song. Like, oh,
I'm and gonna... I think the difference is that in today's world, it's a little different than like 10 years ago. The producer wasn't getting the shine that they are today, because producers are now being seen as artists. And like, a lot of times you're not even using the word producer. People are like, oh, that's that artist over there that made that beat for that artist.
Right. That's you what know? Is that the cool. DJ Khaled version of the pop industry? Like, is it the DJ who's, or the mixtape?
I think it's not that as much, simply because that's more of like the, I'm the guy in the middle. I'm bringing A and B together because I think those will work well. You know, obviously that's kind of like, that job is thrown on the producer. Like, that is my job too. If I'm like, this person's going to work well with this person, I'm going to do that, but I'm also going to produce it and co-write the vocals and so on and so forth. Yeah. Right. So I guess, like, I mean, if I had to like choose my route or whatever,
or if you could just be known for, like, if you could check number one, number two, which would you rather me know you at? 'Cause we did this even in titling the announcement of the podcast. It's like, artist, producer, is he producer, or, you know, like, if you could pick,
what the hell is
what
does
Jake George know me of first? Yeah. Is it?
Can I feel like knowing you for the short amount of time that I have, I would say artist first.
Yeah. Because why would you say that? I like that.
Because it's just like, you have so many, you have kind of like your hands in all the cookie jars, mm-hmm. where, and I think, being, I have been kind of hungry for a producer that kind of pushes me and kind of is not afraid to say, hey, don't do this instead. So I feel like that in itself is artistry.
Yeah.
So I think if you were primarily a producer, you wouldn't be having these conversations that we're having right
now. Yeah. And I think that's a big part of it, is like, if 15 years down the road, the producer is known as what the artist is in today's world, like, I might say producer.
Don't you think, know? In 15 years there's not really necessary to even brand the two of those separate from each other?
I think we're kind of going into that, mm-hmm. point. Well, 15 years, computers will do.
Oh
that.
My god. Yeah, like we, yeah, exactly.
No, but I do
I'll be
I
levitating
do,
to right. work.
I think in 15 years it's just gonna be a bunch of artists running around that do different shit,
yeah,
to be honest, because it's like I can't tell you how big of a proponent I am of producers building their brands, and producers building their brands develops them into these artists. Like, you see producers nowadays going on tour,
Yeah.
Metro Boomin's going around on tour and selling out clubs.
Mm-hmm. Especially like, in Europe. What? I was in Amsterdam and it was like, there was no singers or people coming through. It was all DJs throwing huge parties, and they would have thousands of people that just want to hear what they can do with the music live.
But a lot of that's technology too, though, right? Like I'm old enough to remember flipping through the like the book on a cassette tape to figure out who wrote that song and why does it sound so much like, or are the guys from New Edition that are all on their own now, are they still having their songs written and produced by the guys that did the original, the original New Edition? And like now that's woven into the fabric of, it's like, oh, I love this song. And we, the first thing we do is find out who, like Banks' record, find out who produced it. Okay, let's follow him too, because we know
which,
that that's
which I think is still like on the more rare side.
Of course.
Like nobody's doing what we do and like pull up Wikipedia and see who the producers and writers are for this.
But more than ever.
It's becoming, more than ever.
But still rare.
It is the forefront. Like Grammys just put out this whole thing. It was like, shout out your producers and your engineers and stuff. And they allowed you to go through and like pick the artwork, or like find the song that you did and then screenshot like the picture of all the people that worked on it so you could post it on Instagram and stuff. And I was like, that's fucking cool.
Yes.
You know, because that gives shine to the people that, because people don't realize how many people are involved in the back, in the background of all of these records. Like,
especially now, it's not just a guitar player and it's not,
Totally. Even outside of the producer, like we could sit there and do the main thing, but like the person who, you know, develop the marketing plan
or shoots the video
show,
and then
shoots
the video, who colored the video.
Exactly.
Who, I mean, like, it's, it really is.
There's so many creative people involved that it's like, it's more important than ever. And how strong brands are. We were just talking about that off the mic too. It's like how strong brands are. It's like, you need to be able to build a brand for yourself in order to sustain in this world.
Right.
Like it sucks. Cause like I could make the best music in the world, but until I have the numbers to back that up, nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
So that just shows you the power in numbers. You know, a lot of people don't. They're like, well, it's all organic and everything, you know, like it'll find itself.
Like, no,
the cream
it
rises to the top. I even say that all the time. But it's like, yo, you need to have this following in order to build this brand for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm a huge proponent of producers doing that, because I hate seeing cats who are producing for people and nobody knows it, which is fine, because it's like there are certain projects that I work on that. Yeah, I want to be more behind the
scenes.
There
are some I won't put words in your mouth. Sure. Are there some projects where you go, you didn't do shit on this?
I mean, I think it's hard for me to say that because I love everybody I work with, and I'm gonna put my stamp of approval on everybody.
He's not gonna do it. He's not.
I will 100% say there's people in the past that I've worked with that didn't do a damn thing, but you know, like I appreciate the ones that actually admit that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I got a shout out like Kelly Rose, because she's the shit. One, amazing vocalist, and two, like one of the most humble people I know. Like we were just sitting in the,
she's gorgeous.
Not to mention
for the record,
she's like my sister, so I can't really say that. It's kind of
well,
weird.
I can because I follow her on socials, and she, I'm like, dang, she's got good hair.
No, she's anyway,
she's very cute.
Yeah, well, she comes to my house with no makeup. I was like, don't look at me. So I'm like, just get out of here. But no, so she, like, I had her featured on one of my first. Or was it my first? I think it was my first original release. Oh, I had her featured on it. And she's so humble enough that she brought over like what she wrote to it. And I was like, that's not it. Right. And she was like, okay, then what the fuck is it? You know? And I was like, oh, let me write something. So I like wrote something. And she was like, this is awesome. You know? So, and then I had her cut the vocals, and I just had this thought in my mind. I'm like, this is exactly how I want it. You know, like, can you do this? And she was like, absolutely. You know, so she didn't, and she wrote like, you know, a few words in it, and she's the first person to admit that. Even I'm going to sit there and I'm going to be like, no, her and I, we 50-50, whatever. It's like, it's all good. You know, but she's like, no, you did all that shit. Take credit for that. So it's like having people around me that are encouraging that and are like, no, dude, like stand up for what the hell you did.
Yeah.
Like, instead of being there and, you know, because I'm going to be really modest and be like, no, it's like, you know, it's all a group effort. We're, you know, we're here together and doing all this stuff. But it's important for people to be proud of what they've done and, you know, and to surround yourself around the people that are going to support that versus put that down, I guess, is it. So, you know, it's like it's important to have that circle of people that you can trust, in which I'm very happy with my circle, you know, because I'm very selective of who I work with and who I surround myself with.
I would say still paper up any and everything you can.
Yeah, no, it's very important. I mean, for anybody that's, you know, like listening and
that,
is questioning. It's
that
like,
cricket deal ended up in a lawsuit.
Yeah.
It's because once people took payment for their contribution to the project, as opposed to taking a ride with it to see where it went. Yeah. And once they got their payment based on their agreements, they went, yeah, this is worth fighting for.
Yeah, that's a good reason to see the light at the end of the tunnel instead of cash your check before you get on the track.
Yeah, I gave some money back.
Yeah, I can imagine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me
I had nothing to do with it, but yeah.
Let me ask you this question.
Sure.
If you could pick 1 to 3 artists to work with tomorrow, big or small, who would it be?
Oh, man. Oh, I had this conversation with KR the other night, actually. Who did I say? Because that was a really good answer. True. Dead or alive?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I think number one would be Mac Miller right now. Because, like, when he died, I was like, damn. Like, he was on my list of top people to work with. Just because he, like, transcended the rap thing and, like, turned into, like, that full-on artist that everybody knew him as. And I was like, man, I really wanted to be a part of that. So, number one, I'd say Mac Miller. Number two, I would have loved to be in the studio with Queen.
Really?
Like, oh, my God.
That surprises me.
No, so, like, to me, it's like, when if I listen to a song and I'm like, how the hell did they do that? It interests me.
Gotcha.
Right? And then I listen to their whole discography and I'm like, how the hell did they do that? Like that, or even like, it's so easy. It's like a guitar and a vocal, but like nobody would ever think of that melody with that progression. Like what? You know, whenever anybody does that, I'm instantly intrigued. And I think number three right now, still living, would probably be like Flume. Because he's a really out there producer that makes some super weird shit that not everybody vibes with.
I love some of his stuff and hate some of his stuff.
Yeah, and that's why I would want to work with him. It's because he's so either right down the pop lane or so far left field that people could give a fuck about.
We were talking about the other day. I put him on and I was like, I don't like any of these songs.
Yeah. No, but
like, I was like, I always forget about him. I really like him. Yeah. But I'm like, well, I don't like these songs.
Yeah, exactly. No, and then you show them, people are like, what the hell is this? And you're like, this is dope production is what it is. Yeah. And that's also coming from like the purest production side of where I listen to it. And I'm like, whoa, like that shit is wild. You know, like that side of it is awesome to me. And so honestly, like I just want to surround myself with people I can learn from.
That's cool.
You know, which is like, if I can sit down with somebody and I can teach them something and then they can teach me something, like I want to work with them. And obviously that those three artists could probably change tomorrow, whatever. Yeah. But like for me right now, like off the top of my head, I'm like, those are people that I feel like I could learn from, you know, and I would like to sit in the studio with them, I guess, you know.
Was there ever an opportunity that you didn't take that you were bummed about? Or it seems to me like that would not be a possible thing. Hearing some of your answers tonight,
I learned really early to trust my gut.
Yeah.
So I don't regret anything.
Do you have anything you passed on?
Yeah,
like a big opportunity. Like Alan Stone was approached by R. Kelly or his team.
What a good move!
And
miss that.
Yeah, it was like 4 years ago, and it was kind of a head scratcher. It was like kind of the blue eyed crooner. Yeah. Like that could be. It's gonna be.
Yeah.
Kells is probably gonna be bad. Yeah. But he like saw the writing on the wall and was like just passed on it, and I thought bold, like anyone that wants to be in that lane, like that's a big audience. And he was just like, nah. Anything like that for you?
I mean, R. Kelly hasn't approached me yet, but
he's approached a lot of young women.
He wishes he could right now. I'm sure. They're a little old for him. Yeah, right. The problem is,
No, but I'm nothing to that level, but more on
what
I'm
thinking
small
about,
things,
like you know, you mentioned Ryan Lewis earlier. Sure. The reason I asked the question is like, is there somebody who at the time it would maybe it didn't make sense or there wasn't a lot of notoriety?
Fell out of touch.
I think that more relates to when I see an opportunity and I don't take it because I feel like it's not the right time.
Gotcha.
And that happens. That's happened like a ton of times where I sit there and I'm like, am I ready for this?
Yeah.
You used to say it, Susan, all the time. I said, because Alan's manager is Bruce Floor, who's partners with Dave Matthews at Red Light Management.
Yep.
They got 300 artists and Bruce is friends with everybody. So I'm not going to say he's a friend, but I know Bruce and I've said, okay, we'll go down and see Bruce. Yeah. In fact, 2 years ago, Bruce was, or I guess it was 1 year ago. He said, come out, take you to a show. We'll meet. I said, okay, if we go do that. And I was to say, you got to hear Susan do her thing. Like, are you ready? Do you want that opportunity now? The answer is no. Like, if you only have that card to play once, it's not today.
Yeah, that's it. And then for me, that I guess those are kind of the quote unquote opportunities that I passed on. But it's hard to say like passed on because they're not gone.
Right.
They're just there.
Not the time.
Punch that ticket until you're ready to do it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And that's. It kind of goes back to that thing of like people approaching me and be like, hey, I want a beat from you. I'm like, dude, you're not ready yet. And not just like I'm all high and mighty with like, you know, I'm this big producer guy or anything, but it's like, you know, you have to know when the right time is. And timing is literally everything in this industry.
My industry labels, as well. That's my whole thing right now is I say this on every podcast. I'm getting torched in the message boards by shareholders of our company because I haven't made announcements. I haven't pushed the envelope forward. And I'm I need everyone to understand that I didn't do this so that I could just constantly put out press releases and fluff up what we're doing. Yeah. Like, I think what we're doing is better than most. And I know what most of the marketing efforts are getting people. It's getting people to buy stock is driving the stock price up, and that makes shareholders happy. But what we're doing is focusing, like we were talking about with your dad, is focusing on 2020 election, finding out what are we on the precipice of a federal legalization or rescheduling. And if we are, with the tools that we have in place and the infrastructure we have, and that happening, it's the opportunity is so monstrous that that's what I'm setting myself up for. I don't want to peek at a 16-year-old kid in high school. I want to peek at 25. We're setting ourselves in a position so that the opportunity presents itself at the perfect time. And I think it's the same thing with you guys as artists. Like, you need to make sure you are absolutely ready to take full advantage of
it. Because when I was like 17, I was 17. I mean, we were going over to, you know, New York and shaking hands with like the biggest people in the industry, like in the office, kicking it with them, all kinds of stuff. And I'm so grateful that it didn't happen.
You didn't pull somebody aside and say, can I play this for you real quick?
Or even I'm grateful that I wasn't given like a contract then that was like, hey, are you like, it's your time. Because I was not ready.
Yeah.
Do you think
they knew that?
I think anybody who's been in the industry knows
their talent.
Yeah. But I think honestly, like if I'm sitting there with like a kid and I can read on his face like he knows he's not ready, like I'm gonna respect that kid way more than somebody who's like, I'm fucking ready and I'm better than everybody out here.
Yeah, totally.
Because if you're not better than everybody out here, you're never gonna get a shot.
It's tough in the hip hop culture.
Yeah.
Everybody I mean, you have to have that mentality, but then there's also the knowing of you're probably 3 years out from being where you need to be.
I think it goes back to like professionalism, what you were talking about too. Like for me, opportunity is like, I say 80% of success is showing up. If you have what it takes to like have the discipline to show up and not sleep and like take the chances that are in front of you, I think that is what changes opportunity into success. Yeah. You know?
When my buddy, one of my best friends, Ronnie, he was rapping at the time. That's how we met. I was producing for him. We had this wild idea of it's like, yo, if these labels don't know who we are, like, let's make them know who we are. So we got a bunch of personalized gifts. Like, we found out this A&R from this label just got married. So we're going to get him this, like,
that's a dope move.
So then we flew down to LA and, like, literally, like, knocked on the door of Interscope, knocked on the door of every label that we saw fitting the music that I was I was producing for him. And we just rolled up and just, you know, walked in. We're like, hey, we have a meeting with so-and-so. And they're like, you do? And we're like, yep.
Clearly, I'm holding the package for him.
Yeah, easily,
you know, and it worked like 2 out of 5 times. And one of them was, and then we flew straight from LA to New York. We did the same thing over there.
I love it.
Yeah. And then we went over to Epic Records. And Ronnie walked in. He's just golden tongue guy. He'd talk anybody's ear off. He walked in, went up, had a meeting with, just swindled his way into a meeting with one of the, engineers, or excuse me, one of the A&Rs over there at Epic. And he was like, okay, well, let me ask you, are you ready? And Ronnie said, well, yeah. He says, well, I'm going to go show LA Reid you once. And if he doesn't instantly want to sign you, you're never going to come back here again. You understand that?
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, shit.
Maybe I'm not ready.
And that kind of like, obviously I already knew it at that point, but it solidified the knowledge of like, timing is everything.
Totally.
You know? And if I'm not ready right now, like I better get myself ready. but mainly like having the knowledge of like, is this the right time?
Yeah.
And if it's not, it's not, and that's okay.
Right.
Just don't wait too long. Yeah. You know, just don't just.
I think people have longer than they think, especially when you're young. Definitely. Definitely. I think one of the things that like we try to tell our kids, or at least one of them's not talking yet or walking, but tell Carter is that, you know, there's a long time to decide what you want to, like a lot of parents bullshit their kids about having it
you're
all
18,
figured out. Yeah.
Out.
What's next? Yeah. Better get your life together. Like I think you got to have them making progress at all times,
and
but
mistakes, actually.
Pretending. Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at 40 to pretend to my children that, and I like, I'm in a profession and in a position where I should be absolutely convicted in everything that I want. But honestly, like this podcast and social media marketing and that side of it was the perfect marriage for what I enjoy doing professionally and personally. And I think it's just by, you know, sheer luck that technology and timing all lined up so that they do kind of cross feed to each other.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that I was taught at a young age that rang a bell was what like my mom and dad taught me is like, you're young, so go fuck up now. Like, go make your mistakes, you know, because this is, you know, this is the time.
We got an amen from dad. And that's good.
This is the time to go make mistakes. But the other side of that is like, you know, everybody will kick it because my dad just kicks it with me and like all my homies. And all the people I work with, we're all young and vibrant and we have dreams.
Living
and
your
shit,
life,
right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, like, you're kicking it with these kids. And he's just
closer to your dad's age than I am to me. So I understand him completely.
But he's like, you know, he's like, well, when I'm kicking it with these kids, I'm like 19. I'm 24 again, you know? So it's like, when I go hang out with, you know, my father-in-law, I'm fucking 93. So what the hell, you know? So who am I going to hang out with, you know?
I love it.
So it's who you surround yourself with that bring those opportunities for sure.
Well, I'm grateful that we had the opportunity to have you on our podcast.
Yeah, I don't talk all day.
Should we end with our newest feature?
Key in.
Before this child wakes up? Okay, hold on. Key in. All right, this is a random question populating wheel.
Okay.
We're going to spin it and you have to answer whatever question pops up. Yeah, I was like, we need to add that sound effect.
I would definitely will.
Ooh.
Ooh, this is the best one.
Okay.
Describe yourself in three words.
Loyal.
Like it.
Humble. And that's kind of two words, but.
You can add the extra word. We'll allow you.
I was just going to say, No, hold on. You can't give me on the spot.
You can. We're asking you to describe your entire being in three words. You can take a moment and process.
And I think it's tough because like the third word isn't really like something you would describe yourself as. But I would just say family because that's like the entire driving force.
That fits. That works.
Of it all.
That's the best out of the three.
That's the whole reason I do it all.
Yeah,
so,
that's cool.
Loyal, humble family, I guess.
I love that. Well, Jay Crocker, where can people find you?
Oh man, I'm everywhere. At I am Jake Crocker, all over the place. Jake like Gyllenhaal, Crocker like Betty. You know,
I love it.
Yeah, no, all over the internet. Hit me up on Instagram if you're listening to this right now.
If you're a young kid hungry to work,
100% will respond to you. I respond to every single person that hits me up. So
I love that.
Hit me there. I'm gonna be dropping a bunch of YouTube videos soon, kind of giving people an insight on the production and stuff like that. Pretty soon. I got a new studio that my pops and I built on Capitol Hill. So
man,
all the things are going, you know. Got a bunch of new music lined up, all the 2020 releases. So
love it.
Yeah, a bunch of solo stuff, a bunch of projects with all kinds of talented people coming out. So
cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And we'll catch you guys on the next episode.
Boom boom.
Take care, guys.